Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Procrastination, putting it off, kicking the can down the road. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Carpet in the bathroom. Like, why? In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
I'm Ashley C. Ford, and I host Into the Mix, a Ben & Jerry's podcast about joy and justice produced with Vox Creative. For the past few years, I've seen a lot of hand-wringing about Governor Ron DeSantis's agenda to end what he calls woke indoctrination. But we wanted to know, what does that mean? And how does this agenda actually affect the people living and working there? Especially those who have benefited from the diversity, equity, and inclusion programs that DeSantis's policies would uproot. Check out the latest miniseries on Into the Mix, a Ben & Jerry's podcast. Subscribe now.
Welcome to Switched on Pop. I'm musicologist Nate Sloan.
I'm songwriter Charlie Harding.
And I am producer Rihanna Cruz.
Charlie, Rihanna, tell me what you think of when you listen to this.
I feel like I'm in the presence of a holy figure.
Rihanna.
So when I was a kid and I was watching TV, you know, in the tri-state area, they would have commercials for the Broadway shows going on right now. Yeah. And so that riff is burned into my brain, assumedly Idina Menzel's version of the riff, because it would be in the Broadway trailers. Come see Wicked, you know, come buy a ticket. And it would be on five times a day.
All right. What are we talking about? It's the movie musical Wicked, starring Ariana Grande and Cynthia Erivo, just hit theaters, and we had to bring in the whole team to break this one down, y'all. This is a big cultural moment, right? This movie is the highest grossing opening for a Broadway adaptation ever.
Wow. Whoa.
It might even save movies as we know it. You remember last year we had this collision of Barbie and Oppenheimer? People called it
Barbenheimer.
Thank you. We have a similar creation now. We have Glicked. Charlie, are you familiar with Glicked?
Only as of this moment, but I did go see Wicked last night and Gladiator 2 was playing at the same time, so Glicked.
And this thing is so popular with theater kids across the nation that they're planning sing-along showings of the film over the holidays.
Oh, God.
This movie is inescapable. The press tour has occupied our collective imaginations for the past few weeks.
Yeah.
But y'all, what about the music?
So Nate, what you're saying is today we're going to be holding space for the lyrics and the music of Defying Gravity.
Exactly. Rihanna, Charlie, there's no Wicked without the songs. And the music and lyrics to those songs written by the composer Stephen Schwartz for the original Wicked stage musical, which hit Broadway back in 2003 when young Rihanna was seeing these trailers in the tri-state area. The original show is based on the book Wicked, The Life and Times of the Wicked Witch of the West by Gregory Maguire. It starred Kristen Chenoweth and Idina Menzel, set a ton of records for ticket sales, won multiple Tonys. And now 20 years later, we have a job to do. We have to hop on our broomsticks and break down the music powering this cultural phenom. And in doing so, maybe we'll right some wrongs of our own. Because back in February, we did an episode with our hysterical friend, Bridger Weiniger, exploring his thesis that musical theater can never be edgy. And, you know, we said some things about Spring Awakening and other shows that rankled some of our listeners. So I feel like this might be an opportunity for us to give musical theater its due with a loving analysis of some of these iconic numbers.
Okay, there's also some personal rights to wrong as well, because in that episode, we were trying to convince Bridger to love musicals because his boyfriend, Jimmy Smigula, is a major Broadway actor who was in Spamalot with Ethan Slater, who is in Wicked. So, you know,
connections.
6 degrees of separation.
Well, that's not our only connection to this show, because my mom, the great Randy Sloan, was in the original production of Godspell in Toronto, which was our friend Stephen Schwartz's first theatrical production.
Wow.
Whoa.
Connections.
Yeah, she was Gilda Radner's understudy.
Wow.
Cool.
Martin Short, Victor Garber, Paul Schaefer, Andrea Martin, Eugene Levy. I mean, it was like a stacked cast.
Legends.
Wow.
So yeah, everything has been building up to this moment.
Spoiler alert, full nepotism. It looks like we're going to like musicals.
Outing myself as a Nepo baby here. Okay, before we get into the music, we need to establish a little bit of the plot of this thing.
Okay.
And I'd say at its heart, this is like an origin story, right?
Mm.
Cast your mind back to 1939 and the classic film musical, The Wizard of Oz, score by Harold Arlen and Yip Harburg.
There's no place like home. There's no place like home.
A show which introduces some of the most canonic pieces in American music, like Somewhere Over the Rainbow.
I sing it every day as a lullaby to my little boy.
The movie is where most of us first meet Glinda the Good Witch, who gives Dorothy her ruby slippers, and the Wicked Witch of the West, who is Dorothy's antagonist. 50 plus years later, in his book Wicked, Gregory Maguire changes Glinda's name to Galinda, and he gives the Wicked Witch of the West the name Elphaba, a play on L. Frank Baum. Wicked, the musical, and the movie.
And the book.
Asks, who was the Wicked Witch, really? Was she so wicked after all?
Was she born wicked, or was she made to be wicked?
How good and evil is only what we interpret it to be.
So this is a great conceit, because it allows us to create this whole new narrative around the relationship between these two witches, the good and the bad, and takes us into these existential questions of what really is good and what really is bad.
As the person who saw Wicked last night, going into it knowing truly absolutely nothing, I was surprised to find out that the film slash musical slash book is actually High School Musical The Witch. Because unlike The Wizard of Oz, in which we go on this great journey on the Yellow Brick Road, the majority of the film, which is, I guess, the first half of the musical, because they, of course, have to make money and they divided the film into two parts, it takes place basically in high school. Like in the Wizard of Oz version of high school.
Which is called Shiz University, by the way.
Terrible name. I'm
terrible
sorry,
name. But... which made me laugh so hard every time in the movie they were like, here at Shiz.
Okay, wait. Yeah, you're getting ahead of yourselves, though I do appreciate a good high school musical comparison. And yes, there will be spoilers in this conversation. So if you have yet to see Wicked, like all of us, you know, go do that and then listen to this. We'll break down as much of the story, I think, as we need to. But yes, this is a tale of an unlikely friendship between these two people, Galinda, the good, Elphaba, the wicked. Now we meet Elphaba. She's born into this prosperous family, but she's this unwanted child because of her green skin. She has these magical powers that she doesn't know how to control, that alienate her from everyone. And it's only when she arrives at the aforementioned Shiz University and meets our other protagonist, Galinda, that she gets this opportunity to become something, to master her powers. And she is promised that she will one day go and meet the Wizard of Oz.
Ah.
This is where we get that mainstay of every musical theater production ever, the I Want song. This is where our character establishes their motivation over the course of the show. And for Elphaba, the Wicked Witch of the West, that motivation is to be accepted. Let's hear how she expresses this in The Wizard and I.
And this gift or this curse I have inside, maybe at last I'll know.
I love that little shift at the end.
When she sings The Wizard and I, the I doesn't land on the home chord like you'd expect.
I don't feel like it's a spoiler to say that if you don't know the end of The Wizard of Oz, it's well established that The Wizard of Oz is kind of a fraud. And so from the get-go, we know there's going to be something amiss that if she gets what she wants, it's not going to go her way.
Yeah, if you go to see Titanic, you know the boat's going to sink. If you go to see Wicked, presumably you know that the Wizard of Oz is not a real wizard. Of course, Elphaba doesn't know this. And as you both astutely observe, this song has these little clues that her desires expressed in this I Want song will not be fulfilled. Let's talk more about that in a second. But before we do, I'm just interested in how this song establishes her character, because my argument here is that the whole productive tension of this show is creating these two foils, Glinda, Elphaba. They're opposites in every way, and they sound opposite as well. So, like, what is the sound of Elphaba in this song? How does she project herself?
Once I'm with the wizard, my whole life will change. 'Cause once you're with the wizard, no one thinks you're strange.
I feel like she's constantly switching between breathy and belting. Mm. And I know that part of her character is putting on this hard exterior, like that she is more confident than she really is interiorly. And I feel like the blending of those two different vocal styles sort of says exactly that.
Yeah. And the role was originated on Broadway by Idina Menzel, currently played in the movie by Cynthia Erivo. And Menzel is noted as having a really lovely mezzo-soprano voice, and I think that's carried throughout all the Elphabas over time.
Once I'm with the wizard, my whole life will change. 'Cause once you're with the wizard, no one thinks you're strange.
So here we're kind of in this range where she goes up at certain points, right? When she sings The Wizard and I, like, she lifts up. But also most of the song is in this lower tone, kind of characteristic of Elphaba. When, you know, we'll get to it later, you juxtapose it with Glinda, who's a high soprano.
So her voice is in the lower range. As Charlie said, it's breathy at points. It has these moments of power, but then becomes subdued. I feel like this is really setting up her character. Someone who has this incredible strength but doesn't quite know how to access it. We get more insight into Elphaba in a moment in this song that becomes a larger theme throughout the show.
Unlimited. My future is unlimited.
Unlimited.
Yeah.
This is a melody we want to remember because it's going to come back.
Is there a word for that?
Yes, Rihanna. We could call it a leitmotif.
Ah, exactly. Right on the tip of my tongue.
Yeah, leitmotif. Going back to the days of Wagner, a melodic theme that returns and always makes us think of a certain character or emotion. Mm-hmm. Unlimited. It's a very powerful melody. Mm-hmm. In researching this and reading Stephen Schwartz's insights into the score, he actually tells us that this melodic motive is borrowed from the original Wizard of Oz, from that iconic song we mentioned earlier, Over the Rainbow. Mm-hmm. So,
oh yeah.
Here's Unlimited. Just focus in on the first, like, seven notes of this.
Somewhere.
Okay, so there's Unlimited here, Somewhere Over the Rainbow. Unlimited, Somewhere Over the Rainbow. So that's a really fun nod to the original score that inspired this whole thing.
Mm. Wow.
Keep this Unlimited leitmotif in your back pocket, folks. We're going to need it later. But now let's wrap up Wizard and I, returning to this note you made earlier about the subtle foreshadowing in the song. Because when we get to the final chorus, there's a few words that make your ears perk up. Okay, sorry to pause it at such a climactic moment, but there's a couple things we need to discuss here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
there's this line about, so happy I could melt.
Right.
Is that how she dies eventually?
That's not good, right? Because that's what happens. We know what's coming.
Right.
The water's going to melt her. So that's a little. That's one of those moments where you're like, ooh, that's not good.
Yeah.
And then later she sings, when they see me, everyone's going to scream. And we know they're not screaming
that's
in joy.
That's not good. It's not good.
They're screaming in terror. Mm-hmm. So, so on one hand, it's this celebratory I want song. And on the other hand, you know that the seeds of her demise are being planted within this.
The dramatic irony of it all makes it a very sad song, honestly. When I was watching this in the theater, I was like, ooh, like, I don't know, it's supposed to be celebrated. And yet you have this deep feeling of foreshadowing.
Even at the apex of the song, which I will play for you now, you'll hear something at the very end, two chords that don't belong, that give us that sense, even at this moment of triumph, that something bad is coming.
I'm so glad you played that moment because I remember hearing that and I was like, I need to go home and learn that on the piano. What is it that they're doing?
Right. We're in the key of C major. But then the last two chords we hear are these really funky D flat with a sharp four.
Ooh.
And then a B major with a flat six.
Ugh.
Whoa.
And then resolving back to C major.
Wow.
It's like really tense and dark right at the climactic zenith of this character's I want song. So this song is telling us things are not going to end well for Elphaba.
Maybe this is a bit of a reach, but in harmony, the chords which are just adjacent to whatever your home chord are often feel the most dissonant, just like you've played. We're in C, and so D flat and B are on either side of that C by just one note. And it's often the thing which is just off by one that feels the most out of control and unstable. And so it's kind of like this I want song has this like the sense of a center. I want this meeting with the wizard. But actually, just off in the shadows, something is discordant, just like these harmonies.
For all the complexity that this song bestows on Elphaba, her dramatic counterpart, Galinda, gets a very different musical treatment. Let's listen to her big number, Popular, and hear how Schwartz creates this other musical profile that really contrasts to everything we just heard in The Wizard and I.
Popular, you're gonna be popular. I'll teach you the proper ploys when you talk to boys. The ways to flirt and flounce. I'll show you what shoes to wear, how to fix your hair. Everything that really counts to be popular. I'll help you.
So this is the moment when these two characters form their unlikely friendship. And we get to know Galinda a little better. Just from that excerpt, how does this character sound different than Elphaba?
Very bright, a lot of nasal, a little grating.
Well, on The Wizard and I, you hear Elphaba belt out these notes, right? They're large, they're strong. Galinda doesn't have the same power in her vocals. So there's some notes in that clip where you could hear like she's flat, you know, she's not hitting the notes exactly. And also doing this like really breathy head voice that together, it's like you see the character in your head. Whereas Elphaba, you don't really see it that much. You're just listening. But this is like the way that Galinda's voice is, you're able to picture who Galinda is through the song.
Which is not picturing Ariana Grande, who can belt, who can whistle tone. I've never heard Ariana go, popular. It's a very unattractive way of singing. But it's sort of fitting for the overly confident, popular girl character she's playing.
Yeah, she's never enunciated so much in her life. And hats off to Ariana Grande. I mean, she crushed this part. Both of them, Cynthia, Ariana, incredible performances. So we hear this character. I like how you said that, Rihanna. And I think we hear someone who is a tryhard. Is that fair?
Mm-hmm. I would say so.
Even the musical accompaniment is trying too hard. Check out the rhythm of these chords. The bass notes are always anticipating the downbeat in a way like they're trying too hard. They're too excited. They're showing off, because there's another way to play this that's a little more straight, where every bass note lands on a downbeat, like One, two, three, four. One, two, three, four. One, two, three, four. One, two, three, four. But that's not what this accompaniment does. It goes one, two, three, four. One, two, three, four. One, two, three, four. One, two, three, four. It lands on that fourth beat like it's too giddy and overconfident and maybe a little anxious as well, frankly.
It's exciting
to land on that downbeat. Yeah.
There's so many moments in the film when the attention is not on Glinda. She asserts herself into the scene and sort of pushes other people out of the way, just like this bass note is doing.
I love that. So this song really gives us insight into Glinda's character. And there's another moment later in Popular that tells us a lot about who she is. Kind of simple, kind of optimistic, kind of like a pop song.
I would describe her voice as brassy, and I love that moment when the brass comes in. Wow, wow. And she's like, you're not going to be as popular as me.
There's a lot that goes down at the end of this song. We have that pop song interlude where we get like the most classic pop song vocalization. La, 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 la.
Yeah.
It's like so simple and brainless. It's great.
And what's crazy is this is not even the first time Ariana has sang Popular in this pop song arena. She has a song with Micah, I think that's how you pronounce it, M-I-K-A, on her first record, Yours Truly, called Popular Song, that interpolates this very show tune.
It might be Micah, we'll have to find out, but regardless, this feels like Ariana Grande auditioning for this role 10 years ago. And then we get this quasi-operatic cadenza.
Wow.
Again, she can't help but show off, you know?
And I don't think anybody was being like, Ariana Grande can't sing. You know, like she cut her teeth in musicals. She's always had a very strong vocal prowess with whistle notes and whatnot. But this is like next level. Like my jaw dropped when I heard this in the theater. I did not know she had that in her.
So at this point in the score, we've met our two central characters. We've heard how different they sound. Now, let's follow Wicked's lead. Let's take a brief intermission. And when we come back, let's see how these two characters come together in one of the all-time climactic musical theater songs.
Hey there. I'm Ashley C. Ford, and I host Into the Mix, a Ben and Jerry's podcast about joy and justice produced with Vox Creative. I don't know about you, but I've seen a lot of headlines about how Florida Governor Ron DeSantis wants to end what he calls woke indoctrination. Like in 2021, when Florida passed the so-called Stop Woke Act that would limit how schools and businesses could talk about race and sexual identity. But we wanted to ask, how does it affect the actual people and business owners in Florida? To find out, I talked to a man named Antonio McBroom. Antonio is a Black business owner who says he found purpose in uplifting marginalized people. He even started his own company with a mission to help people like him navigate bias in the workplace.
If we literally cannot address the real challenges of our marketplace, the real challenges historically that have led to this, if we can't be intentional and talk about that in the workplace, it's a threat to our democracy.
Hear the story of how he and other business owners put the Stop Woke Act in legal limbo. Subscribe to Into the Mix, a Ben and Jerry's podcast.
With an Intel AI PC, AI assistance helps you save time. With AI-powered text-to-image tools, you can unleash your creativity with fewer clicks. Or let AI draft your emails. It's possible on an Intel AI PC. The Additional purchase may be required. Learn more at intel.co.uk/AIPC.
Adobe Express is the quick and easy create anything app. It's my go-to for making my business stand out. From videos and social posts to flyers and logos. Search for Adobe Express to find out more and use it for free.
All right, y'all, there's a lot more that happens in Wicked, but at this point, we need to jump right to the very end of this movie and the song that in the original musical was the end of the first act. Now it's the end of the first part as of the Wicked diptych. This is one of the great musical theater songs of all time. In the movie version, it clocks in at 7.5 minutes.
Wow.
Stairway to Heaven.
And it really synthesizes all of the themes and the contrasts that we've been hearing up till this point. We have to spin Defying Gravity.
Something has changed within me. Something is not the same. I'm through with playing by the rules of someone else's game.
So this song is playing the long game because we are starting in this really low, slow place. There's only one way to go from here, and it's up.
We talk a lot on the podcast about this idea of like text painting, you know, but I think this is like doing the opposite, where the lyrics come forward and then the music is bolstering those words, where she's talking about something has changed within her. And this instrumental is like brooding, you know, it's uncertain. We can't really discern anything out of it. And then when she sings Rules, it lifts and we get this horn line, you know, that's like, ah, she's figured herself out as she lifts up the register.
I'm through with playing by the rules of someone else's game.
Schwartz set this song in the key of D flat. And he says he did that very deliberately. D flat, that's a really low key. It gives you a lot of room to elevate. So I think that's a very calculated decision.
D flat is also one of those dissonant chords that we heard earlier in The Wizard and I. Now we have gone to Defying Gravity. We have moved up to that key, which had been dissonant when it had been set against the key of C.
So before Wizard and I, C major, now we're up to D flat, the true essence of this character, perhaps.
We are defying tonal gravity.
So from this place of depth, we get to ascend to the highest reaches of this song in the chorus.
If it's time to try defying gravity, I think I'll try defying gravity, and you can't pull me down.
Oh, we're cooking now. What makes this chorus so effective? I think part of it is the internal rhyme. I think I'll try defying gravity. There's so many I words in there. I think I'll try defying gravity. It's very subtle, but it kind of carries you along that line and makes it so easy to sing and so easy to listen to. It's very satisfying. Then the melody itself defies gravity. The first time, I think I'll try defying gravity. Next time, I think I'll try defying gravity. So we went up where we went down the first time.
Okay, yeah.
So we're literally defying gravity. And then we get this hallmark of a great musical theater piece, a piano vamp. And when you hear that, you're like, okay, here we go.
Shit's about to get real. Like, something's about to get real serious.
Someone's about to start sing-talking. That's what's going to happen.
Not only do we get sing-talking, we get a duet between these two characters who have been the focal points of the whole story. And this is the only time they've sung together, except for a song earlier where they expressed their intense hatred for each other. That's called What Is This Feeling? Let's just listen to that for one sec in the middle of Defying Gravity.
Loathing, unadulterated loathing for your face,
your voice,
your clothing. Let's just say I love it all.
Okay, so that was the only other time they've sung together, is when they were loathing each other. But now, in Defying Gravity, we get a moment of true harmony between these characters.
Just you and I, defying gravity. With you and I, defying gravity. That will never bring us down.
This moment is short-lived. Elphaba says, come with me. Glinda's like, I can't.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. And we've completely forgotten the plot of this movie at this point. There's this whole talking animal oppression subplot.
Right. It's a metaphor for fascism.
The wizard has been revealed as a fraud who's trying to turn the talking animals into the common enemy of the people.
And Elphaba has superpowers.
Yes, there's a book of spells called the Grimmery that only she can read.
Right.
Yeah. Basically, everyone figures out and says, hey, you've got superpowers. You must be a witch. And now, since she's been discovered to be someone with superpowers and a witch, as the wizard says, to unite people, you need a common enemy. And so she is going to be the enemy of the people.
So we had this fleeting moment of harmony. Now it's past. And it's time for Elphaba to come into her own.
She's got to fly west. She has to become the Wicked Witch of the West.
And here is her diva moment. Earlier in the musical, we noted she sounded breathy, kind of unsure at points. There's no doubt here. There's no ambiguity. That just kicks ass. Was that some good sing-talking for you? Fly!
That's all I wanted to hear. You know, coming out of this musical, I was thinking about, what is the sort of genre trope that it's working in? It has a lot of rock instruments, but it doesn't have a lot of, like, pop song repeated choruses. There's a lot of through composition. And now I'm realizing, Wicked is prog rock. Lots of key changes, fun rhythmic dexterity. I think that this is like straight up Rush.
This episode also is remedying one of the major problems I had coming out of the movie, where I was like, Cynthia Erivo's performance is very uneven, where the songs at the beginning of the movie are delivered in a less inspired fashion than the songs in the back half, like Defying Gravity. But through this conversation, I'm realizing that's a choice. She's unsure of herself at the beginning of the movie. Elphaba isn't comfortable with her place in the world, and so her delivery is a little bit more tense, a little bit with pause. Here, she's fully committing vocally. And I think this is really illuminating that shift for me, where I realize, no, that's on purpose.
We actually get a callback to that earlier style right at the penultimate moment of Defying Gravity. It's another unlimited leitmotif.
Unlimited. Unlimited.
There's our unlimited / somewhere over the rainbow leitmotif making one final appearance before we get our big finale. And curtain.
The riff in question.
You can't bring her down. She just keeps ascending. It's like, this is what it has in common with Hamilton. And where...
A
Okay. King George sings that the oceans rise and empires fall, except for he gets it backwards. When oceans rise, the melody falls, and when empires fall, the melody rises.
Oceans rise, empires fall, we have seen each other through it all.
The king sings so confidently that he understands the direction of the world, but it's actually going against him, just like the actual king of England in this time of history. And the Wicked Witch of the West, Elphaba, she's singing, everyone's going to bring her down, but she just keeps rising further up and up and up above. She is unlimited, defying gravity.
That riff feels so unprocessed. It's really jarring, which I think is the intention. You know, like you hear this like this massive breath that she takes before she launches into it.
Yeah, well, let's end with this riff because never has a little vocal ad lib been so minutely discussed. and I love that because the original, the one that young Rihanna Cruz heard in the commercials back in 2003 is sung by Idina Menzel, sounds like this.
I feel like I'm going to say something unholy. I think I like the new one more. Am I allowed to?
It's funky. There's
everyone is probably going to hate me.
One more time.
The breath, the charisma.
that breath is crazy, Rihanna. You're right.
She also holds the note for so much longer. Like, it's like Cynthia Erivo is flexing here. You know, she's like, I can change it up. I can make it more funky and I can extend the note longer.
I agree. I think the new slaps. I like to imagine a group of like musical scientists in a lab being like, how do we take this and make it even more extra for the movie? And they're moving the notes around until they find the exact right alchemy that will make this ad lib pay fealty to the original, but also usher a new generation of Wicked fans into the franchise.
And it's not a fair comparison because I read that the original show had like 25 orchestra members and this orchestra is over 100 players.
Oh my goodness.
There's a lot of extra support, not to say anything negative about the vocal whatsoever, but there's just a lot more going on to build up the energy in this moment.
There's so many songs from Wicked we haven't even discussed in this episode, but what I hope we have been able to do here is tell part of the musical story of this cultural phenomenon through a few of its key iconic songs. And for anyone out there who left our last episode on musical theater appalled, dismayed, infuriated, I hope we've assuaged some of that emotional intensity by demonstrating that we truly do love musical theater and we really genuinely want to know how it works and understand it better. And let this be a peace offering to you.
To quote the lyrics from Defying Gravity, I hope you're happy.
I feel unlimited.
We are unlimited.
Switched on Pop is produced by Rihanna Cruz, engineered by Brandon McFarland, edited by Art Chung, illustrations by Iris Gottlieb, a member of the Vox Media Podcast Network, production of Vulture, which is part of New York Magazine. You can subscribe at nymag.com/pod.
Find more episodes of Switched on Pop anywhere you listen to podcasts. And reach out to us at Switched on Pop on social media. Tell us your experience of these songs, Popular, Wizard and I, Defying Gravity, and the ones we didn't get to talk about. No One Mourns the Wicked, for instance, or Dancing Through Life.
Good songs.
I want to know what everybody's favorite riff is, personally. Favorite version of the Defying Gravity riff.
Yes, where do you fall in the great riff debate of 2024? Are you more of a Erivo or more of an Adele Dazeem?
The wickedly talented.
The wickedly talented Adele. I had to show a lot of restraint throughout this recording, not dropping that. So, you know, pretty proud of myself.
We're going to be back next Tuesday with another story on a major pop act. And until then, thanks for listening. Unlimited.
Unlimited.
I'm Ashley C. Ford, and I host Into the Mix, a Ben & Jerry's podcast about joy and justice, produced with Vox Creative. When I first heard about Florida Governor Ron DeSantis passing something called the Stop Woke Act, I was curious what that would actually look like, beyond just political rhetoric. In many reports, this new law would limit how people could talk about race and sexual identity at work and in school, which could basically uproot diversity, equity, and inclusion programs. So I wanted to talk to someone caught in the middle of all this. Like Antonio McBroom, a Black business owner who sued the state of Florida because, as he sees it, the Stop Woke Act hurts businesses like his that want to intentionally uplift marginalized people in the workplace. Check out Into the Mix, a Ben & Jerry's podcast. New episodes out now.